You're with SBS Radio.
Last week, UEFA Europa League Cup was held in Baku. However, it attracted worldwide attention not on the game itself, but on Henrik Mkhitaryan and Armenophobia in Azerbaijan. Our guest is Hayk Kayserian, Executive Director of ANCA, the Armenian National Committee of Australia. Hayk, welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Thank you for having me, Vahe.
Hayk, you wrote an article on the topic. Could you give us a background on the subject?
The article, Vahe, was called "The Question of Baku or Not Baku Has One Answer, and That Is Not Baku." And the reason I chose to focus on this is because we've had, you know, obviously the controversy around Henrik Mkhitaryan, an Arsenal player. His club makes it all the way to the Europa League final. But because UEFA has decided to hold the Europa League final in Baku, and he is Armenian, he was unable to go, fearing for his own security, which is a very just feeling for an Armenian to have. That was a great way of bringing this issue to light and bringing the fact that Armenophobia exists in Azerbaijan to light, as in racism by way of dislike or hatred towards Armenians. However, the issue around world bodies like UEFA, and now we hear that UNESCO is about to hold its World Heritage Council conference in Baku as well. You know, last month or 2 months ago, the Formula One was held in Baku for the second or third time. The Eurovision has been held there, and all these sort of events are being held in Baku. And while the Mkhitaryan issue brought this all to light, it's actually beyond the Mkhitaryan issue that people need to judge Baku on when they are deciding whether they want to hold their events there. Because if the world wants to be treating oil-rich dictatorships with impunity, then they're doing the right thing by allowing them to promote this themselves at events such as the UEFA Europa League final. To give you an idea of what we're talking about, even before we reach the Armenian stuff, which is what Mkhitaryan brought to light, we're talking about a country in Azerbaijan that is actually ranked 11 out of 100 on the Freedom House rankings of Freedom Index. Freedom House says that corruption is rampant, that Ilham Aliyev has led the country since 2003 with an iron fist. It says that the regime, which is what it calls the Aliyev regime, has overseen an extensive crackdown on civil liberties. There's an article in the Washington Post that talks about Azerbaijan under Aliyev holding 128 political prisoners and breaking them down into, you know, 68 religious activists in jail, 17 political and social activists in jail, 9 journalists in jail. These are the sort of regime that we're talking about, the sort of regime that's also being caught bribing with 2.9 billion euros between 2012 and 2014 European politicians in exchange for favourable outcomes and favourable results in European parliaments and other formats like that under what's known as the Azerbaijani laundromat. I mean, a country with this sort of record shouldn't really be rewarded with finals such as the Europa League and events such as that one. Now, in terms of Armenophobia is basically state-sanctioned racism against Armenians by the Aliyev regime. And the way this is projected is quite simple. For example, children's textbooks in Azerbaijan erase Armenia from the world map. So Armenia doesn't actually exist. If a child going to school in Azerbaijan is looking at the map on an Azeri textbook, government officials describe Armenians as enemies of the state. Aliyev has actually tweeted himself that our real enemies are the Armenians. The president actually declares his intention to rid the region of Armenians and march onto Armenia's capital, not Artak's capital, Armenia's capital, that Yerevan will be part of the Azerbaijani homeland. I mean, this is the environment in which people are growing up in Azerbaijan. And it's no major surprise when in 2004, an Armenian serviceman named Kurken Markaryan went to participate in a joint NATO course with a lot of other countrymen with a lot of people from other countries, servicemen from other countries. There was an Azerbaijani soldier there as well who woke Kurken up in the middle of the night with an axe. His name was Ramil Safarov, and he hacked the Armenian soldier to death. And that guy was just participating in a NATO course. Now, Ramil Safarov was detained in Hungary, which is where that course was being held at the time. And a couple of years later, after heavy lobbying by Azerbaijan, Hungary decided to extradite Safarov back to Azerbaijan. When Safarov arrived in Azerbaijan, he didn't go to jail. He was actually greeted like a hero. There was a fanfare about him. There was all sorts of street parades, you know, greeting him for what he did to, you know, young Kurken Markaryan, simply because he was Armenian. They rewarded him with a promotion in the army, and he's living like a hero today in Baku. So all of these things put together will definitely play on the minds of a Henrik Mkhitaryan when Azerbaijan says, look, we're granting you all the security assurances that we can. And even the ambassador actually said something along the lines of, if Mkhitaryan goes to play football, he's fine, but if he does anything else, then I can't guarantee his security. So, of course, Henrik Mkhitaryan was going to think about all of these elements that lead to the sort of hatred that was best exposed by Safarov, and decide against participating in one of the games of his life. I mean, he's a 30-year-old footballer. He's not going to have many other European finals ahead of him. This was an unbelievable opportunity for him to play on a stage that had all the prestige, all the credibility that you would want one of the premier footballing competitions to have. But because UEFA decided to grant this to Baku and not succumb to pressure, which is significant, in the lead-up to the tournament to move it to Wembley or another stadium that would have been more fitting for this final, they basically robbed that final of its prestige. Arsenal lost the final, incidentally, and I'm sure a lot of people are asking what might have been if their star midfielder, Henrik Mkhitaryan, was on the pitch. We'll never know.
As you mentioned, some Azerbaijani officials said they have given guarantees to Henrik Mkhitaryan. However, Henrik was only the face of the scandal because other football fans with Armenian surnames were not given visas.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, you can give security assurances, but as long as you're hacking Armenians to death, even on neutral ground, as long as you're putting people on your blacklist saying that they are enemies of the state and not welcome in Azerbaijan if they've been to Artsakh, including the Premier of New South Wales, by the way, is on that blacklist, you're not actually guaranteeing anybody with security. And then you're absolutely right. That was a scandal in itself and should have resulted in UEFA cancelling their plans to hold this final in Baku. When fans of Chelsea and Arsenal with Armenian surnames were applying for visas, they were being rejected. and they're guaranteeing the security of Mkhitaryan. Look, I hopefully he would have been secure if he went, but to be perfectly honest, the fact that he didn't go and the fact that, you know, he's safe, we're very happy about that. But I think we're also happy that so much attention has been brought to Azerbaijan and the regime that seems to be acting with impunity at the moment. I mean, there have been many dictatorships around the world that the West and Europe, etc., have had great relationships with at certain points in history, and they've regretted those relationships later on. You know, Azerbaijan, in every way, shape, or form, is heading toward that sort of direction. I mean, we've got somebody who has appointed his own wife as his vice president. He's bribing politicians, it's proven. Now I hear that he's holding this this World Heritage Committee session of UNESCO in Baku next month. And at this session, what the World Heritage Committee of UNESCO actually does is they examine reports on the state of conservation of inscribed sites and make other decisions to implement. Now, anybody that is assessing sites that are sacred, they need to be treating themselves, their jobs, a little bit more seriously. I mean, The Guardian only last year reported that Azerbaijani government in the past 30 years has actually been engaging in a systematic erasure of the country's historic Armenian heritage. It showed very clearly fachkas being destroyed, numbering at around 10,000. It showed all sorts of offences that were being caused by this regime, and somehow none of that really matters. I mean, 22,000 tombstones destroyed, 89 medieval churches destroyed. And despite all of this, you know, the World Heritage Session for UNESCO is being held there. You know, this is treating a regime, a despotic regime, with impunity. And I think it's got to be called out. And the good thing about all of this, Vahe, the lining in the sand, if you'll have it, is that we were able to bring enough attention to this issue. And when I say we, I'm talking about the rest of the world, because Arsenal fans who have, you know, no idea about Armenian history necessarily, were educated on this issue, informed on this issue. People like Piers Morgan, who is a very famous broadcaster from CNN and other channels, is a huge Arsenal fan and basically called on Arsenal and Chelsea to boycott the match and resulted in a lot of people being informed about the issue as well. There was an article written a day about why UEFA should not have chosen Baku as its location for this final, but, you know, it did. And I guess the lining in the sand is that a lot more people know about what Baku is all about.
Are you surprised from UEFA's position on Henrik Mkhitaryan? On their website, under the title No to Racism, it's written, "The campaign to eliminate racism, discrimination and intolerance from football has become a major priority for UEFA."
Look, I started my career as a journalist at SBS reporting on football. And, you know, obviously we've done a lot to cover the international football bodies. Not always good stories, FIFA and UEFA, even, you know, the African bodies, the CONCACAF bodies in South America, etc. And I'm very intimately familiar about their inner workings. UEFA has not had the mud slung at it like FIFA had in the past under the previous regime over there. But this decision, especially when it says that one of its goals is to eliminate racism from the world and football, is very surprising, but more importantly, it rings alarm bells. You know, this is a crime by UEFA. There's no other way to put it. You cannot say that you're trying to eliminate racism. You cannot say that you stand for fairness and not even look at the Freedom Index by Freedom House. You can't Google Azerbaijan without getting a story about how it is mistreating its own citizens. And this is beyond the whole Armenophobia and racism that we are most interested in as Armenians. You know, there were massacres that were committed against Armenians in Baku. These are very easily accessible, and UEFA has all the resources to be able to access this. And their awarding of this final to Baku had no logistical sense to it whatsoever. The fans of both clubs that made the final were complaining because of how difficult it was for a British citizen to get to Baku logistically. So it wasn't a logistical reason. It wasn't because Baku is one of the, you know, seven wonders of the world in terms of cities. It wasn't because of its, you know, phenomenal footballing history that, you know, it's won all these titles and brought so much to football. The reason Baku was chosen, we don't know for sure, but the cynics in us have no other way to make sense of this than think that dollars had at least something to do with it. And that is not in UEFA's code. That is not how UEFA should be working. It should be working in the interests of football and the stakeholders of football, from which the most important are fans and players. And in this particular case, they failed the fans and they failed the players. All they need to do is look at all the empty seats that were in that stadium on the Europa League final day.
Hi, returning to Australia. I spoke with you a couple of weeks ago, just before the federal elections. I presume you are pleased with the results?
Yeah, look, I mean, for us, it was an exercise of watching our friends. because we have for long since decided that the most important element for Armenian issues to be advanced is to have friends in parliament. And I think we released a report before the election to our community, and over 80% of those people who we said were promoters of our cause and supporters of our cause got into parliament. We also made a lot of new friends among the candidates that ended up getting into parliament as well, which was very positive to see. We have a lot of commitments that were made during that campaign by many people who are now in the parliament, either in the lower house or the upper house. And I think it's very encouraging for us to have that sort of a ground to work with. And hopefully we'll all see the fruits of this campaign and the way we ran it on behalf of the people that we represent, the Armenian-Australian community, for the coming term, the 46th Parliament, which is scheduled to begin next month. If I can also add, since the election, Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister, has appointed his cabinet, his ministry, and we're happy to see some friendly faces within that cabinet that we can work with. And also, there was a change in leadership in the Labor Party. Anthony Albanese was elected the new opposition leader, well, effectively becoming the new opposition leader in Australia. And he's somebody we're looking forward to working with again, because we have a long-standing relationship with him and he is well-informed on our issues as well. In his shadow cabinet, we also have a lot of familiar faces and friendly faces there that we look forward to working with as well. So, yeah, the results are clear. I think for the Armenian issues and issues that are important to our community, we have a very clear roadmap on who we have to work with in order to achieve the goals that our community has set as its priorities, and we're looking forward to doing that.
Hi, thank you for your time and interview until our next talk.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.